Engaging with China, France's president and the head of the European Commission, both in Beijing. They're hoping Xi Jinping can help end the war in Ukraine. But with China accused of siding with Russia, what can it offer? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. So, EU leaders are in China for a high-stakes meeting with President Xi Jinping. French President Emmanuel Macron says he's counting on China to bring Russia to its senses and end the war in Ukraine. Macron is joined by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. She says China's position on the war will determine its future relations with the bloc. So, can Europe change Beijing's mind on the war in Ukraine? And how is trade shaping relations between the two sides? Plenty to discuss up ahead. But first, Rob McBride sets it up for us.
French President Emmanuel Macron being given the honour of a state visit welcome by his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping. One of Europe's most influential leaders coming to ask China to exert its influence on Russia to bring an end to Europe's worst conflict since World War II.
I know that I can count on you to bring Russia to reason and everyone to the negotiating table.
This was Xi Jinping visiting Russian President Vladimir Putin last month. Since Moscow's invasion more than a year ago, Beijing has stayed neutral and proposed a roadmap for a ceasefire and peace talks. Most Western leaders, including Macron, have criticized the plan. But the French president has been one of the more conciliatory voices among NATO heads of state. 2 weeks before Russia's invasion, he met President Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin and has spoken to him several times by phone over the past year. Many are now watching to see if Macron and Xi together can provide a breakthrough where others have failed.
China insists on a peaceful resolution and is willing to work with France to maintain the rationality of the international community and avoid actions that could further escalate the crisis or let things get out of control.
In a show of European unity, Macron is accompanied by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, who has taken a much tougher line on China's failure to condemn the Russian invasion. The Europeans are looking, at the very least, to dissuade China from supplying Russia with arms.
We also count on China not to provide any military equipment directly or indirectly to Russia, because we all know arming the aggressor would be against international law and it would significantly harm our relationship.
The signing of lucrative trade deals on this trip is seen as Beijing's attempt to maintain good European relations, even as ties with the US sour.
I hope China will tell President Macron on the one hand, and then tell Madame von der Leyen on the other hand, that it is absolutely important to have a European perspective, which may or may not be exactly identical to that of the United States.
Chinese and European leaders hoping traditionally strong trade links can lead to a diplomatic breakthrough. Rob McBride, Al Jazeera.
All right, let's take this on. I'm joined now by our guests in Saint-Malo in France. There's Jacques Roland, who's a senior research fellow at the Global Policy Institute, which is an independent think tank. In Washington, D.C., in the U.S., Colleen Cottle, the deputy director of the Global China Hub at the Atlantic Council. And in Beijing, in China, Andy Mok, who's a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. Welcome to all of our guests. Jacques, if I could start with you in France. Why this dual-pronged approach, do you think, President Macron and von der Leyen, on this combined visit?
It's to show that France is part of Europe, and Macron knows that China prefers to have bilateral relations with other countries, like was the case when Olaf Scholz went to Beijing, and before with China and Merkel, very often dual meeting. But Macron is insistent on showing that France, yes, is an independent country, but is part of the European Union, and that when dealing with China, with 1.5 billion people, it's better to deal from a basis of representing the European Union with 450 million people than a country like France with 70 million people. So therefore, he insisted on bringing Ursula von der Leyen as 5 years ago, when Xi Jinping made a state visit to France, he invited Merkel and the president of the European Commission to take part in the discussions. So it's very important for Macron, who especially is very insistent on highlighting the fact that Europe has a strategic autonomy, as person has interests and values which are not necessarily those of its allies, such as America, to show Europe as a political identity. And France has always, always promoted the idea of a political European Union.
Well, we'll come to the US in a sec with Colleen, but first, Andy Mok in Beijing. For the president, Xi Jinping, the optics pretty good, aren't they? Two of the most powerful people in Europe coming to him. He'll like that, won't he?
Well, I think certainly China recognizes, and President Xi recognizes, that China has important contributions to make on the global stage, whether that's in Europe, whether that's in the Middle East, with the recent rapprochement between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and other parts of the world as well. So certainly, I think it's no surprise that we're seeing these visits, and more to come. I believe the Pedro Sanchez from Spain will be visiting China shortly as well.
And Colleen, Europe's kind of stuck in the middle between China and the United States. To what degree is the U.S. wanting this conversation between Europe and China?
I think the United States would like to see action from China on Ukraine that would bring us closer to a resolution, that, you know, if there is an ability for EU leaders to help gain traction and urge China on this, I think there is skepticism here and probably in parts of Europe on whether that's actually possible or whether this visit just gives Xi the diplomatic win of looking like he's playing this grand statesman hosting European leaders, but not really put on the spot to make any movements towards a resolution. So I think there's hope, but I think there's also at the same time sort of skepticism and awareness that this may actually be counterproductive and just feeding Xi's sort of in view of China as being the center of the world stage and all things must run through him, and you know the rest of the world must kind of accommodate China's views and positions.
Indeed. How closely do you think, Colleen, EU policy aligns to the US policy on China?
Well, I think the speech that von der Leyen gave last Thursday really, you know, whether that represents the entire EU or not, I think is an open question. But a lot of those, the analysis that's contained in it, that China is moving, kind of a turning a page on reform, is moving, you know, to a more of a security-focused state rather than a trade and economic development is kind of the driver of its policies. I think a lot of what she said does align with what the U.S. is thinking and how the U.S. worldview of China kind of generally is. I mean, the U.S. view is not, of course, monolithic, but there is this, I think, growing impetus to see China, you know, as a competitor in the global stage. And I think von der Leyen's comments do say that, maybe not quite as pointedly as some of the remarks coming out of the United States. And I think some of the solutions she's proposing are also in line with some of the economic solutions that we are looking at in the United States in terms of making sure that you're protecting interests in your countries against Chinese coercion. She referenced the need to potentially look at outbound investment screening mechanisms for key technologies that could, if you know, fallen into the wrong hands, be used to aid Chinese military capabilities. So a lot of these statements and the policies are in line. I think the question is whether the EU will be united enough to sort of see them all through together, or if there is kind of divergences in the EU Commission policies versus national policies that the Chinese can exploit.
How did that speech go down in Beijing, Andy? Because it was a pretty, from von der Leyen, it was a pretty sharp and pointed speech, wasn't it? Fairly critical of China.
Well, I think that the view from China would be that clearly Europe is staking out a separate position. The key phrase here, I believe, that was used is de-risking, not decoupling. And I think that shows the European recognition that it cannot blindly follow the U.S. Going off a cliff, as it were, with this. The other point I want to make, too, is this. I think it's a false choice, or it's presented as a false choice between a more security-oriented state versus one that is committed to trade and investment. In fact, I think China's pursuing both. It recognizes that it's facing an incredibly complex geopolitical environment that really hasn't been seen in a very long time, and requires a strengthening of government structures, alignment of the party, the government and the people. But at the same time, trade and investment, greater integration with the parts of the world that are willing to work with China, including Europe, is vitally important, and that these mutually reinforce each other and are not distinct and separate choices, an either-or black and white binary approach, but in fact, it's both.
Jacques, as you were mentioning, von der Leyen and Macron going hand in hand, as it were, but how much unity is there in Europe about their approach to China, and indeed the U.S. approach to China, or is there divergence?
There is divergence between Europe and the U.S. on the attitude to China. Europe doesn't want a confrontational attitude to China. France doesn't want it. Germany doesn't want it. Most European countries do not want it. But they realize that it has about time to also rebalance our trade with China to reduce risk. For a while, Europe was seen a bit as the global village idiot, accepting all kinds of investment in his country, all kinds of imports, and not asking for reciprocity from China, for example, on the issue of public markets. And therefore, that's why there is a threat in June. There's going to be discussions on a Global Investment Act in order to see how Europe can defend itself in this global world where it has suffered a lot in terms of imports. France and Europe import far more than they export to China. So now it's the time. But at the same time, okay, the issue of trade and economy is very important. But here, Macron also wanted to put forward the idea that China is not only a competitor, but it's also a partner. It's a partner, especially in the fight against global warming and the fight to preserve biodiversity. And today in press conference, there was quite a lot of emphasis on this issue and the fact that the many contracts which have been signed between France and China today involve companies which are actually very involved in water and environment issues, which can help China with their attitude. So there's the attitude, a competitor, but we have to maybe redraw the rules a little bit, but at the same time, a partner. And that's why they think there is something to be done, especially they realize that the Europeans were a bit miffed by the fact that Americans instigated the Inflation Reduction Act, that it only benefited European companies. So Europe is aware of the fact that America fights for its interests first. Europe has to defend its interests first. And at the same time, Europe knows that we don't know who is going to be in power in 2024 in US. So it's very important for Europe to assert itself on the international scene.
We'll come to trade more in a second, in a moment or two. But Andy Mok said Macron, he wants China to rein Russia, for China to rein Russia in on Ukraine. How ready is China to work with France to push hard to obtain a negotiation to end the war, do you think?
Well, I think China's position on the Ukraine conflict has been clear and consistent, and that a peaceful settlement should be reached, and these types of contradictions should be settled through dialogue and not through violence. But we also have to recognize that China is actually not a party to this conflict. Russia is, Ukraine is, countries actually supplying military gear and intelligence to the parties to the conflict are the ones with the real power to end this conflict. So, of course, China, France, other countries can urge the parties to the conflict to reach a peaceful settlement, but it's only the parties, the two or the three parties that are directly engaged in this conflict that can actually bring it to an end.
Colleen, what's your view on that?
I would disagree. I think China may not be providing, and we don't know, there's a lot of accusations and there's maybe proof behind closed doors in terms of China's provision of lethal aid, but it is providing, you know, it is buying large amounts of energy from the Russians. So it is indirectly keeping the war machine running in Russia by those purchases. Yes, maybe if China wasn't purchasing some of that, it would be purchased elsewhere. But at any rate, China is making those purchases. And so there, it does have some influence over Russia to be trying to bring the war to conclusion. So I think it is indirectly, I think it is fair to say it is part of the solution in this part of the war effort. But I agree that the Chinese want to stay really, you know, move it into a dialogue. They certainly have been pushing for that. However realistic their pre-proposal plan is, I think, you know, it's an echoing of common mantras that the Chinese, it echoes what's in the some of the language in the Global Security Initiative. That's China's kind of solution to things. It's non-interference, respect for territorial integrity, which is a kind of a confusing one to treat in the context of the Ukraine war. But really, you know, for the Chinese, I think in some ways they would like this to just go away. They don't want to see Russia fall, because that 4,000 kilometer border could instability into could spill over into China from Russia. So they certainly don't want to see it. The conflict move in such a way that it would put Putin's standing within the country at risk and then trickle over into China. But I think they also don't like the pressure they're getting from the West about stepping into the conflict more. And I think that was part of stepping into the conflict in terms of helping bring to bear the solution. I think that was part of the motivation for this 12-point plan. And so they do see them, they are caught in the middle, and I think recognize this 12-point plan was trying to get them out of that middle, get them out of the hot seat a little bit. And I think, you know, the Europeans are again trying to raise this pressure up, and whether that's going to trigger any different policy, yeah. I think I'm a little skeptical myself.
So Europeans trying to raise the pressure, Jacques. What leverage, if any, does the EU have on China for them to lean on Russia?
But the leverage that the EU has on China is that first, the EU is the main importer of Chinese goods, and it's necessary for the Chinese economy at the moment, which is not growing at its usual pace, 3% and 5% for last year and 5% this year, which is not much. And the China is victim of American sanctions, so the best customer remaining for China is Europe, so it's important. And also Europe is seen as in the vision of the world order that Xi Jinping has, he sees it. He sees the birth of a multipolar world, no longer a world ruled by America in a way, with America as the hyperpower as before. A new world order is being established now, and he appreciates the fact that Europe, especially not everyone in Europe, but at least Macron, wants Europe to be an independent pole in a multipolar world, and which could help. And to go back to the issue of Russia, yes, China has, and Ukraine, China has no beef really in that issue. Actually, the Ukraine war has been very good for China. It gets cheap gas. And now, for the first time in the Chinese-Russian relationship, China has clearly the upper hand. But let's not forget today, there was some kind of breakthrough showing that China wants to involve itself in a role as a peacemaker, maybe not a peacemaker, but at least a force of reason. Macron was asking to help Russia, the Chinese convinced Russia to come back to their senses, to come back to the camp of reason. And today, Xi Jinping said clearly that China was totally opposed to the use of nuclear, bacteriological, and chemical weapons in a conflict. So that's quite a breakthrough, and it's something which will obviously have an impact on Russia's aggressive stance that we've seen in the past few weeks and months.
Andy, do you want to come in at that point?
Okay. Yeah. So I think China has been clear and consistent for 40 years that it's following the path of peaceful development, and that a peaceful global environment is not only in China's interest, but the interest of the world. So certainly I think this commitment to resolving this conflict peacefully can let everyone get back to building a better world from a climate perspective, from an economic perspective, from an income inequality perspective. So certainly I think that this is, again, I think there's very little doubt that this is what China is aiming for.
If we can come to something that Andy was talking about a little bit earlier, Jacques, this idea of de-risking and not decoupling, how do you read that? What do you think that actually means?
De-risking in the case of Europe and European firms is due to the fact that they will not invest as blindly as before. And we've seen the facts that many countries, many firms, are no longer investing massively in China. They will want to keep Chinese factories in order to have the ability to sell their goods in China. And for example, now only 10 firms are responsible for 80% of investment in China, as opposed to 49% before. So five or six years ago. And it's due to the fact that there's a certain weariness toward China, that they can't always trust Chinese businessmen as honest partners. They can't always trust the Chinese legal system. And therefore, now the companies who invest in China are the ones who sell their goods in China. And the big investors are BMW, Volkswagen, BASF, etc., the top 10 companies. And while other companies who used to rely on China as a cheap workshop are now creating structures, manufacturers, factories, or using factories in other parts of the world, or in Vietnam and other countries, India, Bangladesh, and moving away from China. So de-risking means that, yes, we won't now depend on the Chinese production machine, as we saw during the COVID. It could lead to problems in the supply chain, and they want to avoid that at all costs in the future.
Colleen, she said that China and France have the ability and responsibility to transcend differences and restraints as the world undergoes profound historical changes. He's talking about, this concept of a new world order that I presume that China would like to see itself at the top of. How does that kind of talk go down in the United States? And what does it do for tensions?
Especially if you have an eye to the hearings that have been taking place on the Hill and the stand-up of the new committee in the House to look at the Chinese Communist Party, that certainly feeds into the narrative of not just, you know, Xi's maybe looking at a world, or he's talking about a world order with China as playing a leading role or the center, and that becomes framed in some of the U.S. political circles as China is trying to take over the world. They're going to take over, the Communist Party is going to take over all aspects of life. You know, democracy as we know it is over. This model, the Chinese model, is going to get exported everywhere, including here. And so I think it has the potential to really be turned and used in ways that make it very difficult to focus on anything with the China relationship aside from competition. If you recall, there's the three pillars of the U.S. The current administration strategy on China. There's the compete pillar, the align pillar, which is aligning with allies such as Europe and in Asia, and then there's the compete in the effort to kind of preserve the international rules-based order as we have it now.
Okay.
And I think all the effort gets focused on this compete, and really not just compete to preserve the order, but just compete to beat China. And that rhetoric just really shifts the focus there.
Okay. I'm going to jump in there, because I'm sorry to interrupt. We're just coming to the end of the program, and I wanted to end with Andy. What's the view in China on that? Does Xi Jinping see himself as the head of the new world order at some point?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, again, China is becoming more central, but that doesn't mean leading the world. But I want to briefly talk about this idea of de-risking. In the business world, we say that revenue solves a lot of problems. And one of the risks I think Europe is facing is growth. So China imports something like $3 trillion a year worth of goods, which is about the size of the French economy. And, you know, if Europe is able to work with China, France might be able to lower the retirement age instead of having to raise it because of the trade and investment opportunities. So I think risk encompasses a lot of things. Certainly, some of the questions Europe has are legitimate and should be addressed. But the risk of missing out on this opportunity of Chinese growth, that could solve a lot of European domestic problems as well.
Okay. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Do appreciate all your perspectives. Thank you very much indeed to our guests. There's Jacques Rolland, Colleen Cottle, and Andy Mok. Thank you. And thanks for watching. You can see the program again at any time by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, just go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can, of course, also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here, it's goodbye for now.